Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and really happy to, I shouldn't say reintroduce or welcome Jerry Apps along with his daughter, Suthan Apps Bodilli, and they are here to talk about their new book. Jerry's a professor emeritus at UW-Madison, the author of many books on rural history, country life, and the environment. And he's co-created four documentaries with Wisconsin Public Television. Suthan has been with us as well. She's been an elementary and middle school teacher for 20 years. She's the author of the book One Room Schools, Stories from the Days of One Room, One Teacher in Eight Grades. And her latest work is Old Farm Country Cookbook. And there's a lot of great memories in this book. I really had a lot of fun reading it, and I know you will too. And you may have some memories as well of those times, or maybe some questions about those times as well. And certainly the old family recipes, it's kind of interesting to talk about how they may have converted these recipes into today's cooking terms. I'm not so sure about that. We'll find out as we visit with them. You can join in our conversation by calling us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page titled The Larry Mueller Show. Suthan, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hi, thanks for, it's good to see you again, Larry.
Yeah, and Jerry Apps, welcome to you.
Oh, it's good to be here, Larry.
Whose idea was it to write this cookbook? And you know, when we say cookbook, there are a lot of good recipes in there, but there's a lot more than simply the recipes.
Well, the story of who got the idea, neither of us had the idea for this book.
No?
My editor, Kate Thompson, at Wisconsin Historical Society Press, one day suggested to me, she said, would you ever think about writing a cookbook that goes back to the days of the wood-burning cook stoves and no electricity and all of that? And I said, no, I don't think so. I don't know anything about recipes. And she said, well, maybe you could find somebody to work with you. And that's how Susie got involved when I agreed to do it. I said to Kate, I said, I'm not going to do it unless I can find somebody to help with the recipes. And Susie gladly agreed to do that and discovered, and she'll have to speak for herself, it was pretty darn complicated to starting with my mother's recipes that mostly were ingredients with no directions.
Is that the...
Yeah, he's telling the truth. He came to me and said, how'd you like to work on a cookbook project? And I actually thought that was a great idea, and I thought it would be a lot of fun, although I couldn't even recall my grandmother ever using a recipe to cook. As I think about being in her kitchen in the farmhouse, I don't remember seeing her even use a cookbook or recipe cards. But we knew we had this old white box that I brought along,
yeah,
full of all sorts of old recipes, so we had something to start with. And as my dad said, as we started looking through the recipes and thinking about this idea of matching his previous memories from the 30s and 40s to what he remembered eating in gatherings and groups of people, we started picking out recipes that fit the memories.
Yeah.
And we discovered, and I discovered, that this was going to be a lot more difficult than I thought. Because as he said, she had put even just lists of things with no amounts of measurements and no directions. And then as we thought about it, she didn't have electricity in her kitchen.
Yeah.
So everything that she cooked and baked and did was on the wood stove. So several of the recipes said things like warm oven or a hot oven. So when you're translating recipes for today's cooks, you have to figure out at what temperature do you think she meant. And then also she didn't have, you know, indoor plumbing. So yeah, everything, or a refrigerator. So everything was quite different when she was cooking in her kitchen.
Well, I have to say that your work has resulted in great success. You brought along a couple of items here that are the cookies and
What's the other? So,
yeah, I brought along today butterscotch oatmeal cookies with a little with some walnuts, and they're in the book next in a visiting chapter next to a really nice story about going to a shivery. And the other thing I brought today, since I actually am a full-time teacher, I brought something from the school chapter called apple fritter bread, which is actually more like a cake, even though you
really
bake it in
good.
A loaf pan.
Yeah, that's really good. Well, Jerry, what was your mother like? What was Eleanor like?
Well, when you think back to what she had to put up with, which was five people in our family, we're farm family, of course,
yeah,
and with no conveniences that we take for granted today, she up early in the morning, when I think about in the winter time, when our old house was heated with wood stoves. And about midnight, the wood stoves would go out.
Yeah.
And a great cold would come over the entire house to the point where the water pail sitting on the sink had ice on the top of it. And my poor mother would have to get up, take that water pail. My dad would put it on the stove when he started it before going out to the barn. And she would have to wait. This sounds goofy, but she'd have to wait till the ice melted before she could pour it into the coffee pot. So she was a woman of great patience, a woman who was able to deal with what today we would call adversity. In that day, it was the way it was.
Yeah.
Everybody had the same thing going for them, so nobody felt sorry for anybody else. That's just the way it was. And in spite of all of that, she was able to come up with some remarkable meals. I mean, I'm still here, and I'm no kid anymore. And farm people eat a lot. We worked a lot. And anyway, she was a remarkable woman, 100% German.
Yeah.
And so we had a lot of German recipes. We have several of them in the book. We lived on sauerkraut in the wintertime, by the way. She knew more sauerkraut recipes, I think, than most anybody else. Sauerkraut and wieners, sauerkraut and ham, sauerkraut and pork chops. Boiled sauerkraut, baked sauerkraut, raw sauerkraut, cold sauerkraut. Anyway, we have all those recipes in the book.
And a whole lot more, obviously. What are your remembrances? Susan, do you have any memories of your grandmother?
Yes, I do, actually. And I had a really nice time thinking about how to portray her, because obviously when I knew her in her kitchen, she did have electricity and a refrigerator, so it was a little bit different. But she really enjoyed showing me how things were important for her. And when I went to visit with her, I often stayed with her in the summer for a week during strawberry picking season. She had a pick your own patch that I like to help with, and she, you know, brought me out to the chicken house and let me help collect eggs. And she insisted that I see what it was like to you know, butcher a chicken and make sure that I knew how to cook things from scratch the way she said it. And I really enjoyed watching her do things like make homemade donuts in a big pot of oil and frying them up and putting powdered sugar on them. And
that recipe's in the book too, by the way.
It is, yes.
As I remember. And you mentioned strawberries, and Jerry, you have a piece on the berry patch, picking strawberries and blueberries and so forth, and you mentioned sparkle. And I thought, and this is from years, you know, you're writing about all those years back. I just went online before the show, and Sparkle is still a very popular brand of strawberry.
It is. It's a June berry. It's a very juicy, sweet berry, and it bears very well. It yields is very good. And this is my mother's pin money, so to speak, the money that she, along with the money she got from selling eggs, that went toward our clothes and Christmas presents and the groceries. That was my mother's project. But I've got to mention a strawberry recipe, one of my very favorite ones. And two slices of homemade bread, thick, slathered with butter on both sides. And then you pick out a half a dozen of the most juicy, the most ripe, the most special strawberries. And you line them up on the bread. Then you take a knife and you squish them down. And then juice soaks into the bottom piece. And you put the top piece on top. And then you take a big bite out of that. And the juice runs down the side of your mouth. Oh, it's so wonderful.
That one's not in the book, though, is it?
Actually, it is.
How can you not have that recipe?
It's not written as in recipe style, but it's written as a story, yeah.
And we should just explain, or I think you sort of did a little bit, but just for people, every chapter starts with a story.
Yeah, it's a storybook as much as it's a recipe book. The recipes all relate to the stories. And, of course, that's what I do. I write stories and tell stories. And all of a sudden, we are now matching recipes to stories. And one of the fantastically interesting story roots relates to the food. When you think of food, you often think of stories associated with food. That's the sort of the genesis for the book.
Yeah, it's really really a lot of fun to read it that way. I really enjoyed looking through it and reading it. And it, you know, the stories you tell about the kitchen being really the heart of the home.
It was. In fact, in the wintertime, we closed off the entire house except for the kitchen and the dining room. So there was a stove, wood stove, kitchen stove in the kitchen, and the dining room had a stove. The rest of the house was not heated. It was terrible. So, but the kitchen was the core, was the center of all activity. It's where the baby chicks warmed up when you brought them home from the depot and you sat them behind the stove and you woke up in the morning and you heard chirp, 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 all these little chicks having a fuss. And if some little pigs were born too early and it was cold and the little pigs were in a box back of the stove, I mean, there's a lot more to the kitchen than just the preparation of food.
Yeah, and the cast iron skillet that your mother used.
And I still,
do you still have it?
I still have it. Yeah. When I still have a wood burning stove at my farm that I have now, and when I go up there by myself, which I do every so often to write, I drag out that great big old skillet, and I cover the bottom with sauerkraut. Oh, my wife rolls her eyes. My Norwegian wife rolls her eyes when I do that. I cover the bottom with sauerkraut, and sometimes I'll slice in a few wieners on top of the kraut, and it bubbles and makes all kinds of interesting sounds, and it is so tasty, along with a bottle of Leinenkugel to wash it all down.
You know, it must have been... The process must have been a little bit of an emotional thing for going through the recipes, for example. I just wonder, what was it like emotionally?
Well, very much so, because we have a chapter on funeral menus and recipes.
Yeah.
And in those days, when my grandparents, on the Witt side of the family, both of them were in our home in their caskets with people coming with casseroles and all kinds of food and walking by my grandfather in his casket to bed every night.
I've
never forgotten that. And I've never forgotten the smell of flowers all around the casket. So there's a lot of emotion tied up to this book, including what happened at Christmas and what happened at 4th of July and all of that.
You know what? Let's get our listeners a chance to join in here. If you have questions or comments, maybe a memory to share, I hope you'll join in. Jerry Apps, Susan Apps Bodilli, our guests today, they are the authors of Old Farm Country Cookbook, Recipes, Menus, and Memories. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45, we'll talk to the author of a new children's book that is based on the true story of a lamb who was born blind. Right now, though, visiting with Jerry Apps and Susan Apps Bodilli about their new book. It's really a reflection of what went on years back on the farm. Jerry has those remembrances, and he and Susan, and Susan did the work. I'm guessing Susan did the work on the recipes, Jerry.
She did all the work. I've read them, looking for typos and that sort of thing.
He ate the food,
I did pass judgment. Susan, by the way, Susan prepared every recipe in this book, save one. She would not fry a squirrel.
And the directions are there for how to do that if anyone wants to try. And that's been an interesting conversation, because the book talks that we've given so far for groups at our book launches, the mention of fried squirrel is bringing up all sorts of conversation and interesting debate about which is better, fried squirrel or rabbit, actually.
They both taste like chicken.
Yeah. You know, I always thought rabbit tasted like chicken.
I did bake a rabbit, so I'm familiar with how to do that, but I told my dad I was not going to go ahead and make squirrel.
Jennifer in Madison has something for us. Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. It's really fun hearing about this book, because I was raised somewhat the same way by my mom and grandmother, who would say, well, you know, to make a strudel, you take some flour and some water and a little oil, and then you put it together till it's right. And that actually does work if you do it often enough. So I've always made everything from scratch. And there was a time I'll never forget when I was baking a cake, putting everything, you know, into the mixer, and I had my apartment door open because it was a really hot day. We didn't have air conditioning. And one of my upstairs neighbors saw me, and I heard her running up the steps yelling, kids, kids, you've got to come see this. This is how they used to bake before there were mixes.
Oh, Jennifer, I'm so glad you brought that up, because when I was working on the book, and actually since, I haven't used a store-bought mix since, and I also haven't used my mixer, like my... I have a Cuisinart and, you know, an electric plug-in mixer. And even the cookies and things I brought today, I just have been stirring everything with a wooden spoon. And there's something about the tactile nature of this and the smell of and the motion and the action of doing it yourself that I have really enjoyed. So it sounds like you are in the same camp when it comes to cooking from scratch.
Although yeah. I'm baking a cherry and Juneberry pie right now, and I did use the Cuisinart to make the dough, because that's really
just quicker, yes.
That's a tough one when you do the two knives together. Much easier with a machine.
Oh, Jennifer, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. She mentioned cherries, and you've got a short chapter on cherries and some recipes in the book as well.
We do. In fact, that was a big deal for my mother, cherry season in Door County. The local livestock hauler, Ross Caves was his name, he would clean out the back of his old truck and load up all the women in Wild Rose and thereabouts who wanted to go to Door County, and they all sat in the back on chairs, and they rumbled all their way up to Door County and picked cherries and came back, and it's got to have been a terrible ride in the back of that old truck that would haul cattle to the stockyards in Milwaukee. And when we got home, my mother put us all to work to pitting the cherries, and I have that story in the book, and along with several cherry recipes.
Yeah, there are several in there. Don in Eau Claire has something for us. Don, hi.
Hi there. I wondered if you had any experience or questions about Corning solutions. My mother was the youngest of five children of German immigrants. My grandfather had been conscripted in the Prussian army twice in the 1860s. A third war was looming, and he and his wife and their child escaped to America. They ended up in Kansas as wheat farmers. Anyway, one of the recipes that my mother had given me was where they had largely pork to deal with. They had very little beef, but when a pig was butchered and cut in half, why the loin meat was left attached to the vertebra, and then the vertebra segmented, and those were soaked in a Corning solution. The recipe my mother gave me was they started with a bucket of water or a crock of water. They added salt until an egg would float.
Yeah.
And then at that point, they added saltpeter, and the liquid was heated. The foam skimmed off. The liquid was cooled. And then the meat was put into that. After a certain period of time, the meat with the saltpeter and all had turned pink. It was taken out, and that was cooked with sauerkraut.
Wow, that sounds like...
Sounds pretty good. No, we didn't do it quite that way. We butchered our own hogs, of course, and cut them up on the kitchen table in the talking about before. But the hams, we would take them to a smokehouse in Wautoma and have them smoked. Same for the bacon. And then the pork chops, as I recall, we would put them in a crock, a red ring crock, that was we'd put the pork chops in there and immerse them in molten lard, and when the lard would congeal, it would protect the pork chops. That's how we handled it.
Because there weren't refrigerators.
Oh, of course not.
We had
an ice box. And the ice box, we used the ice box in the winter to keep things from freezing. That's true. It was insulated. We would keep milk in the ice box in the wintertime so it wouldn't freeze. People find that just preposterous.
And you have a nice story in the book about collecting ice.
Yeah, in the Iceman.
Yep. The Iceman.
Yep. The Iceman was a very important person in the summertime. He would come by once a week. And he would, with one hand, he would carry in a 50-pound block of ice that he had taken from the back of his truck. With a little whisk broom, he would sweep the sawdust off the ice, because that's how it was stored in the ice house to keep it from melting in the summer. And he would come into the house, march into the house, dripping a little bit of water along the way, open the top of the ice box, look in there to see what was left of the previous ice, take that out, put it in the sink, put in the big pot, the big 50-pound of ice, and then my brothers and I would look at that little hunk of ice. And if that little hunk of ice was big enough, we would make homemade ice cream. And I tell you, there's nothing that comes close to tasting like homemade ice cream. And we have that recipe in the book and the directions on how to do all of this.
And you also wrote about the collecting of the ice, which I thought was quite...
From Wildrose Mill Pond, they made ice, as they called it. That's quite a trick to do that.
Yeah, it sounded like a lot of work to me.
It was a lot of work. It was cold. It was dangerous. It fell in the lake and in the mill pond. It's not good.
Don, thank you again for calling. I appreciate your call very much. I want to give Jill in Rice Lake a chance to join in. Jill, thank you for calling.
Hello, Larry. The show is so fun for me. It's bringing back all kinds of memories of my straight, tall, 100% German grandmother. And all she taught us and all she did for us. But my main story today is about chicken, and I'm wondering if your mother did this. My grandma never drove. She'd be 123 now. She never had a driver's license. And so she'd ride the train from Bloomer to Cameron, and I'd go to the depot, the bus depot, or not the train. Well, sometimes the train, sometimes the bus. She'd bring the Greyhound bus. But I'd go to meet her at wherever, you know, either the depot or the bus stop. And she'd get off the bus, and first you'd see her big clunky black shoes and the rolled-down brown stockings. And then there'd be a suitcase in one hand and a gunny sack in her other hand, and the gunny sack would be flailing. She was not on a farm. But she'd go to a farm, and she'd bring live chickens with her, and... My father would vacate. He'd say, "My mother-in-law's in the backyard chopping heads." Take the chickens out in the backyard and chop up their heads and do all of the cleaning of the chicken. But grandma's fried chicken. We cannot. My three sisters and I, my dad, told us always until the day he died, like a week before he died, he said, if you girls don't learn how to make chicken like your grandma, what is the matter with you? Dad, we're not chopping their heads off, you know. But anyway, here's what she'd do. She had a pot of bacon drippings that she kept under her sink. Oh. She used it in her hair to soften her hair, as well as I think she would take that bacon grease and coat her hands with it and then coat each piece of chicken with that and fry it in her cast iron skillet and then put it in the oven. And, well, she'd roll it in flour, too, and then put it in the oven. And I think maybe that's the secret, that bacon and bacon grease. And I don't know how it didn't go rancid, but it didn't. You know, and her chicken was to die for. Now, did your mom do that? Grandma was German.
My mother did not do that. But we had our own chickens, of course. And
you had quite a chapter on that.
Yeah, and my favorite story is when the cousins would happen to be there. The city cousins would happen to come out to the farm when we were butchering chickens. And, of course, when you chop the head off a chicken, it'll run around without its head, which is unbelievable. The cousins could not. That was the most gruesome thing they'd ever seen. Bunch of chickens, 3-4 of them running around without their heads. Well, I won't go any further with all of it, but it's it's quite the experience. When we go to they were called cattle fairs in that day, those days. Princeton had one of those, another one at Stevens Point. And around Thanksgiving time, my dad always preferred duck over turkey.
Yeah.
And so we would come home with a duck in a bag, a live duck.
There you go, Jill. Thank you so much.
That's great.
Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And you have recipes for your Eleanor liked to can chicken, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I wanted to say thanks to Jill for calling. And, you know, she brought up a good point about that secret bacon grease ingredient, because that's not written on recipes. And that's just something that you're doing if you're cooking on a wood stove and you have bacon from the morning, that you've saved that. So that was something that we figured out. And I can tell you, Jill, we don't have any hair tips in the cookbook either, but we did spend a long time on the canning chapter, and I need to give credit to my mom and Jerry's wife, Ruth, obviously, because she worked equally on this book with me and helped me with the recipes and made sure that everything was readable and understandable for people. And she also cooked lots of things in the recipe and in the book, and we worked on it together. And the canning chapter in particular, we wanted to be really clear so that people could try it out, because once you know how to can and make jellies and jams, and it's not as hard as people think it is. And
we want it to be safe too.
Right. Yeah.
We're very, very careful about that. Ruth, my wife Ruth is a professional home economist, so she knows the background of a lot of this stuff. She's looking over Susie's shoulder all the time,
and, which I appreciate.
And of course, she reads all of my stuff, but that's another story.
There we go, Mark. Thanks again for calling, Mark in Lone Rock. That's your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I'm having a little trouble with my phone, but I hope you can hear me.
We can.
I wanted to tell you about driving my bicycle from Rockford to Stoughton, where the Coachman Golf Resort is. My mother's aunt and uncle lived on a farm there. And, in fact, it was his brother that built the Coachman Golf Resort. But I would go up there and fish in the pond, and my mother's aunt would make currant pie. I have never in my life, and I loved it, heard of anybody else making currant pie. She had currant bushes there. And I'd also like to make a comment that's sort of humorous now that I think of it, because earlier on the Joy Cardine show, they had a lady talking about aging or discrimination against people that were older, like I am now and you are.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, my mother's aunt and uncle were quite elderly, but my mother's aunt, Elizabeth, loved cats, and she had hundreds of cats. Well, I didn't know anything about cats. We didn't have any cats. And until I was in my 20s, I thought, really did, that the smell of old people was the smell of cat urine.
Oh, my goodness. Well, the better part of your story there had to do with currant pie, Mark. I'll tell you that right now.
I was going to ask you, Mark, were those AC or DC currants?
I don't know. They were the red currants. I have red and black at my house now.
You know, Mark, in our book, we have lots of recipes for pie, but not currant pie. There's cherry pie, blackberry pie, peach pie, mincemeat pie, pumpkin pie, custard pie.
And many of them are current, wild blueberry. Current recipes. Yes.
There we go. Mark, thanks a lot for calling. Oh, my goodness me. Lynn and Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Larry. Fantastic show.
Again. Thank you.
My mother-in-law recently passed away at 89. She was the daughter of German farmers in Tinley Park, Illinois, and she taught me to make gritswurst. It's amazing. Pork, beef, you know, with cheap cuts, you boil it till the meat falls off. Seasoned salt, pepper, allspice. And the thickening or binding or extender is steel-cut oats. And you bake it, and it's a breakfast sausage or a sandwich spread. We love it, and it's my connection to someone I loved very, very much.
Sounds wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
It's amazing.
Yeah, thank you so much. I could hear some emotion in your voice as you were talking about this. Lynn, thank you for sharing that with us. Well, it must have been that way for you at times as well, Susan and Jerry.
It's interesting because when you talk about food as she did, and you connect that to a person who's alive or someone that you've known in your past, it does create a real emotional response, and that's actually why I like talking to people about my grandma's recipe cards, because I've noticed. There are many places to get recipes today other than a cookbook. You can get them online and in blogs and all sorts of places. But there's something about the connection on paper and you're the person that you know's handwriting there on a recipe card that really does make more of an emotional experience for people.
Yeah, my mother's recipe box, she had a tin box about the same size as the wooden box that you brought along. And I think I'm sure my that resides with my sister, and it brought a lot of memories. As we were talking, I was thinking about my grandmother, and she made this wonderful bread, baked this wonderful bread, and of course never had any recipes. And I was never a good baker, but my brother tried and tried and tried. Dennis tried to duplicate.
Bread especially is so awesome. The smell and when you knead it with your hands, and then you have to, like my dad said, you have to be patient to let it rise, and then you get to punch it back down. And there's all sorts of advantages to doing bread from scratch.
Well, George in Fort Atkinson has something. Let's go there. Hi, George.
Hi, Larry, and hi, Jerry. Longtime admirer. I wanted to relate to you a story about something I did every summer when I was a kid. I don't know, 8 or 9 or 10, my grandma would send me down the gravel road that ran outside the farm to collect the elderberry blossoms on the side of the road. And I'd fill up the basket I had on my bicycle and bring them back to the farmhouse. And then what she and my aunt would do was to make elderberry pancakes. And to do this, they would have the cast iron fry pan. You couldn't have anything else, of course. And put some lard in that cast iron fry pan. And I don't know what she coated the elderberries with, but then she would deep fry the elderberries while they were still on the stems in the lard. And then we put that on a plate and smother it with cherries that were, I think, preserved from the year before. And when I heard you talking about cherries, all that came rushing back, and I can still taste those elderberry pancakes, and I don't think I can get them at the Quick Trip today, but I'll see.
Oh, that's a great story, George. Thank you so much. And, you know, I want to ask you about some dates that are coming up, but one of the things that kind of struck me is near the end of your book, Jerry, you write about corn shocking and threshing and so forth that brought farm families, and you would travel from one farm to the next, And this, what George had to say there kind of reminded me of this, that you were reminded of the all the differences among the peoples based on the food that you were served and the community.
That's true. And I was privileged to grow up in a community that was wildly diverse, ethnically speaking, yeah, with Germans and Welsh and English and Polish and so on. And each family, where we stopped, I was on a thrashing crew for several years. When we would stop at a given place, we would have often some of that ethnic food, which said something about the history of that family. Some of whom were first generation arrivals in this country. All of that was a way of bringing a community together.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And you too, or one or both of you, are going to be on the road a little bit in September.
Both of us are attending those, yeah.
Yeah, we're both doing it together. I can run over the list if you like. And on Saturday, September 23rd, we will be at Cassville at Stonefield Village talking at 11 o'clock. On Friday, September 30th, we are at a farm city dinner on a farm near Platteville at 5 o'clock. By the way, you can go to my website and get details on all of these. I'll give you the website address in a minute. On Saturday, October 28th, we are at the Edgerton Book Festival at the Edgerton Library. On Sunday, October 29th, we are at the Reed School. Where's Reed School?
Neillsville.
At 2 o'clock. And my website is merely jerryapps, jerryapps.com. And there I will have further information about each of these events along with a lot of other material.
And I tell you what, if Susan brings along any of her cookies to those events, you're not going to want to miss those.
We have been bringing food to a lot of
events. Oh, yeah. Yes. Come hungry.
Oh, well, I tell you what, let's take Jerry in Manitowoc. He's been waiting a bit. I want to give him a chance because he's got something about cherry pits.
Hi, very quickly, I misspoke to the screener. I saw a segment of Jerry Apps on PBS with his Never Curse the Rain, which prompted me to go out and buy the book. So I wanted to pass that along. I thoroughly enjoyed it. That was terrific. And then just in regards to these, he was talking about cherries and loading up the women folk to take a long trip to get them. I was just wondering, does he know, has he ever heard of, when you get cherries in a very large quantity, say, you know, like you're making juice or what have you, if they come up with a something useful to do with all the pits. I mean, if you had a huge amount of pits left over, is there anything you can do with them?
You know, I have never heard of a use for cherries.
I do not have a pit use recipe.
I don't know what you do. Well,
you can plant them.
Yeah,
I suppose.
You could probably try planting them.
Oh, no, I'm kidding.
I don't think that would work. Well, Jerry, maybe somebody can post up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I would like to know, is there another use for cherry pits?
There must be.
There's got to be.
Of course.
And Ruth in La Crescent, Minnesota wondered, how do you make coffee on a wood stove?
Well, you're just going to have to look at our book because we have detailed information about
there
that.
There is a recipe for egg coffee.
Yeah.
You'll want to get the book so you can learn about that.
Yeah, there's so many great recipes in there, but I also love all the stories that lead up to each chapter, as you talk about the chickens and the wood stove and the ice box and chivalries, which I wanted to talk about. We just ran out of time. I can remember a chivalry that I really had as a young
as
kid.
As can I.
It still sticks in my memory. Jerry, Susan, thank you so much. I hope we'll have a chance to visit again, I'm sure.
Sure.
Thank you, Larry, very much.
The title of the book is Old Farm Country Cookbook. And Jerry, it's
Wisconsin Historical Society Press.
Yeah, Wisconsin Historical Society Press. Get it at your local bookstore. You can order from your website or not.
You can order it right off my website.
And it's jerryapps.com.
That's all there is to it.
Jerry Apps, Susan Apps Bodelli, the title of the book again, Old Farm Country Cookbook, Recipes, Menus, and Memories. Lots of memories. I'm Larry Mueller. here on the Ideas Network.